Welcome to yet another exciting season of Sisters in Conversation, the podcast. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On this podcast, I profile women of color in the legal profession in an attempt to celebrate their contribution to the profession. We journey through their individual stories of perseverance and resilience and overcoming challenges like imposter syndrome, racism, and sexism, to name a few. I hope you're geared up for what promises to be another insightful, informative, and empowering season. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to this podcast. Hello, and welcome to In My Lawful Experience.
And welcome to Sisters in Conversation.
So today I'm sitting with my sister-in-law. Her name is Tebelo. Tebelo, how are you doing?
Thank you, Sinako Advocate. Sinako Lindas.
You know
I'm good. How are you? Finally.
Finally. So the reason why we're saying finally, right, is because Tebelo has been inviting me on her podcast for like 2 years.
Since the beginning of pandemic.
Since the beginning of the pandemic, I was going to have a baby. Nobody knew at the time. You know, going through all the morning sicknesses. I just couldn't do it. And then I invited her.
Baby.
You know, and then the worlds were colliding. But finally, we're here today.
3 years later. And the timing is perfect. I think that's the most important thing to appreciate.
And it's always like that. I always say, what's meant to be will always be.
Absolutely.
At the right time,
Absolutely.
Things happen the way they're supposed to. And guess what? They happen after we have actually met in person.
Finally.
We were both invited as guests at a workshop about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Batu Seng Legal's workshop. So both of us were guest speakers. And then on that day, we decided, okay, we need to sit down. And we need to sit down within the month of finally meeting in person. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if we don't get this out of the way,
It wouldn't have happened. And so here we are. And, you know, the first thing that crossed my mind when I met you, actually, I was laughing throughout by myself, obviously, because I was like, this girl and I actually share so much in common.
Yeah.
We share so much in common. I was listening to you speak, the first thing that came in my mind was that you're so passionate about paying it forward. Mm. You're so passionate about, you know, empowering others. What drives you? Am I right though? Mm. And what drives you? What is the premise of that? Mm. Where do you get that from? What's the reason you're literally so adamant in making sure that you're paying it forward to others?
Like, this is a question that you should also be asking yourself. But you're right, we have a lot in common. But for me, if you remember from my speech that day, was that I was saying, lift as you rise.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing, and the thing that keeps driving my passion, is that the people that I've come to interact with are actually teachable.
Yeah.
They are open, you know, to helping themselves. Mm. You know, they are helping. They are pick-upable.
Oh, I love that. That was the term I loved that.
They are pick-upable, and they make it easy for me to be passionate about ensuring that, you know, passing the baton is a lived experience. Mm. We don't say pass the baton and then sit down.
Yeah.
We pass the baton and we keep on moving, you know? So that's actually what drives me.
And, yeah. You know, as you're saying that, ne, what crosses my mind again is that, eish, ustrip the hore. And do you know why it's funny?
So this is the myth that you want to debunk.
No, it's not a myth, guys. This woman, like, you really, really sound so strict, but I mean it in a good sense.
Like,
though.
Assertive.
Assertive, yeah. Because I'm a mentor, and I think my mentees and anyone who's watching who knows me would say this. I detest someone who wants an opportunity and then they do nothing.
They don't do the work.
You're given the opportunity and then you do nothing.
Mm.
Hence, I loved your speech when you say, be pick-upable.
Mm.
Make it
easy.
So easy.
Make it pleasant for me.
Do you know what I mean?
To empower you.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not
a bad thing. We are assertive. We share so much in common. And I really love that because obviously the second question that somebody who's watching this and is enjoying this conversation would say is that, why did you guys wait so long to collaborate? Mm. This is so amazing. Why aren't we seeing so many more others collaborate? Yeah. And what do you think is the reason why a lot of people just shy away from collaborating, sharing their platforms, you know, kind of thing? Because obviously there's this quote by Beyonce who says, we teach girls to be competitive and we want to see each other as competitors, but we're not. You know, there's just so much that needs to be done that we need a develop and another develop, a sinako and another sinako. Hence the whole paying it forward. What do you think is the reason why a lot of people shy away from, you know, just having these kind of engagements and just collaborating?
Sure. I think, yeah, I really think maybe the concept of collaboration is very new to us, which doesn't make sense because Ubuntu in itself is the spirit of community. And that is actually sharing resources. So I don't know where it comes from. Yeah. You know, we're not collaborating enough like our white counterparts, our Indian counterparts. And one thing that we need to learn from, especially, you know, in CBD, there's everybody selling tomatoes, everyone selling apples. There's enough for us to all share and to all participate. But I think the most important thing that I want to say is that, now I've lost my train of thought. But on the issue of Beyonce saying we teach girls how to be competitive, I think that's just it. I think a lot of us are of the opinion that if I light Sinako's candle, it's going to take away my own light.
Yeah.
And that's not how it is.
It's not.
How it works when you light a candle, literally, the one that you're using to light the other continues burning.
Exactly.
And all you need to do is keep it moving. You can light up to 10 candles with one flame. It's and that's one thing that we need to keep remembering that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's actually my mantra. No candle loses its light by lighting another.
Yeah.
It's my mantra. It's something that I live by. I always, you know, stick to it because, like you said, if anything, I believe that if 10 of us can be, for example, in the profession, we know how it's always
and
been.
And work together.
And work together. All of us can thrive. I am recommending, you know, clients to you. You recommending to me. We briefing each other. I mean, that's the only way that we can even sustain our different businesses. If we actually do light one another's candle. And I think you are right when you say for white people, it's been easy. It's easy for them to collaborate. And obviously, you know, what? But we're saying this from what we've been observing, that you'd find that this person's brother is a lawyer and they're briefing the other advocate who's also in the family and then they're briefing the other one. It's a thing. It's a thing that they know we're doing this together. And by us doing it together, we're making sure we're all shining. You know what I mean?
I think also the one thing that we keep doing as black people is that we all want to see our name on the door. And it doesn't make sense. Like the top five law firms, it's just one surname. You know? But we want to be Lindazwe, Motswane, and Mang Mang, and Mang Mang, and Mang Mang, and Associates. And we're not going to build anything if we're just always chasing after the title, after having our name on the door. Let's rather figure out what qualities do we have in common. Yes, fine, we can just use Lindazwe's surname.
Yeah.
But this is what we are bringing to the table. Let's be in a partnership. But the fact that we all want to see our names on the door means that there is an element of competition. Yeah. And how are we going to build if we're competing? And if we're coming into a partnership with different perspective or rather different values?
Yeah.
We sort of need the same values, the same mission to build on that. And that's why the top five law firms, it's just Workspans. It's just Bowman. It's not Bowman's, Maharaj, and. It's not a long sentence.
It's true. And I think, most of all, it always has to do with knowing what you bring to the table.
Absolutely.
Knowing your purpose, knowing yourself, knowing your journey. Because I think if you know those things, then you kind of always understand that I'm on my lane. Mm. We're together, but I'm still on my lane. Mm. You're not competing with me. I'm not competing with you. We're together trying to create something.
Remember what I said at the workshop? I had said, don't undervalue your contribution.
Yeah.
Don't undermine your contribution. Mm. If Sinako is opening a salon, we can't all be building our own thing. We can't all be opening salons.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to have to ensure that the clients receive or the customers receive tea when they get there.
Yeah.
Someone's going to have to make sure that the salon looks clean and presentable.
Mm.
Someone is going to have to be at reception. So if we are all opening salons, who is actually going to help us?
Exactly.
You know? So your contribution as a tea lady, it matters.
Mm.
Your contribution as a candidate attorney, it matters.
Mm.
Yes, you're not going to get into the profession knowing what you're doing,
yeah.
but your contribution as the candidate attorney at that time, or as a, you know, as a pupil, it matters.
Mm.
Whatever contribution you are giving, your story, your piece of the puzzle, it matters.
It's deep. It's deep. And you know why I say it's deep? I say it's deep because so many times, and I think also it goes into the premise of what makes us actually not, you know, feel like we can collaborate or we can thrive at these spaces is because you really undervalue yourself.
Mm.
And the moment you undervalue yourself, you start projecting on others.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? If you're insecure of what you're bringing to the table, you're always going to look around
mm.
and you're always going to wonder, is it enough?
Mm.
Am I smart enough?
Mm.
Am I good enough?
Mm.
And then when you see someone else that you think is what you think,
mm.
you'll be like, wow. Mm. And then you're like, but why don't you just, if that's what you aspire to be, why don't you just let yourself go
mm.
and do what you think you want to do? You know what I mean? Like if you feel that you want to communicate something, just communicate it without first waiting and seeing, is this person going to share what I think
mm.
they will share?
Mm-hmm.
Can I even speak?
There's been times where people have been like, hi, Austebello, I really want to, you know, start a page where I speak about gender-based violence or where I speak about employment law, but I only have 35 followers or I only have 100 followers.
Mm.
And that's not what impact is about.
Yeah.
Influence and impact is about reaching out to one person.
Yeah.
And I promise you, that one person already does the work for
mm.
you. For me, I've had even people that say, hi, Austebello, I got your details from my sister. She says she got them from Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on social media, so I'm not familiar with you, but this is what I need help
yeah.
with. So imagine somebody who's not on social media heard from somebody who
mm.
is. So my audience is actually not even the people that
exactly.
I'm reaching out to on social media.
Exactly.
My audience are the people who are out there,
but now
who are hearing from other people.
Imagine now if you decided that you're not going to do what you're doing because you don't have 500,000 followers.
When I started, I obviously had 1, 2, 3.
Do you know what
four,
I mean?
5, 18. When True Love asked me to feature in the magazine in 2018, I think I had 56 followers on sister-in-law. Like 56. And
oh
that, for me, was validating. A magazine as reputable as True Love is saying, we like what we're doing. Can we feature you for Women's Month? And I had like 56 followers. I promise you, it was not even 100.
Don't you think, though, it's crazy how these days we think social media is reality? I mean, if True Love outside social media could look at you, look at what you're doing, and say, hey, I believe in you, I believe in your vision,
yeah.
with 56 followers.
Definitely less than 100.
It's obvious that it's something bigger than social media.
And
you
are
bigger than social media.
I didn't have that foresight at the
time. Do you know what I mean?
I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't
mm.
know what I'm doing with sister-in-law. It was definitely just the blog.
Yeah.
I remember I was still working full-time. So for me, I didn't have that kind of vision to even be featured in a magazine at that time. When they asked me for a headshot and I was like, I don't have that, you know.
First of all,
you know, there I am googling what is a headshot.
Yeah.
You know, what are the proper poses for a headshot? Right. And it just you must never undermine small beginnings.
Yeah.
We all have to start somewhere. And impact, like I said, impact and influence, one person.
And I think that someone who's watching and is thinking of this journey and is looking back to true love and what you've just referenced, they're asking themselves, when and how did sister-in-law start? What kicked off that platform? What were you thinking? Of course, you say you were like, I don't know what I'm doing, but here you are. What was that one thing that was on your mind that this is what I want to create and this is what I hope to achieve with this? Yes, I might not know what I'm doing right now, but this is the reason. What is your reason? What is your why for sister-in-law?
So my journey started off with me studying at UJ. I obtained my LLB from UJ. Then I moved on to do articles. It wasn't an easy journey because at the time that I started my articles, a lot of people had already secured theirs in third year and fourth year. And remember at the workshop I was saying, these were people who already had an uncle in the legal profession or at a law firm, or an uncle who's an advocate. They could tap into that network.
Yeah.
And on top of that, or the people who didn't have the network, they had the good grades. I didn't have any of that. I didn't have the network. I didn't have the good grades. So I had to like literally go and knock on doors for my articles. Where I was seeing maybe 6 months or so ago, I was going through my emails, just clearing out emails from a long time ago. And the firm that I started doing my articles at, I'd actually started emailing them 2 years before I started my articles. Because I was like, I want to go do my articles in Melrose. And I kept on emailing. And the HR lady would always say, we don't have anything at the moment. Then one day when I'd forgotten about them, they got back to me and they're like, we're looking for CAs, you know. Are you available to come in for an interview? And this was at a time where I had really just given up on the process of looking for articles. I had then started doing my PLT to just, you know, keep my brain active. I started doing PLT and then I got the articles. And I think at the time that I secured them, it was in November, but I was then going to start in January. So I remember I signed the contract on the 8th of December. I was like, oh, can't wait. Started my articles. It was not for me. So I had a very terrible experience during articles. There were a lot of things that obviously varsity didn't teach you about, just the politics in corporate, the racism, which came as a huge shock. That came as a huge shock. And it was just a toxic environment, mostly driven by the racism, actually. Yeah. That's what made it toxic. I always just felt like I was being undervalued, undermined, not being given, you know, the crispy or the creamy, delicious matters, and really just having to scrape for work. And then I had to just teach myself a lot of stuff. At the end of my articles, I then started a company, Collective Intelligence. And it was just going to be not a law firm, but rather PTY legal consulting. And I was like, let me use what I know to keep me going until I can secure something. I then got a job as a senior legal advisor, but I didn't leave Collective Intelligence. So at the time that I'm busy doing work for Collective Intelligence for myself, and also then being a senior legal advisor, I then... I'm always just getting questions. Hi, Debello, I've got this maintenance matter, or I've got this divorce, or I want to leave my husband or this. And I just thought, wait a minute. These are women who sort of remind me of the issues that my mom went through back then. And part of the reason why I started studying law was because my grandfather was always like, if you want to understand the dynamics of your parents' divorce, you need to understand the law. And he planted that seed in my head that, you know what, go into law. So I then said, wait, these are exactly like a blueprint of who my mom was back then. She didn't know the law. And then at that time, I think, you know, family members were calling me sister-in-law as a nickname. And I was like, okay, let me start a blog. And I called it sister-in-law with the primary objective of imparting or sharing or educating women rather on the importance of legal issues that apply to themselves. So that's how sister-in-law was born. A mixture of, you know, my grandfather, mostly my mom, definitely the reason behind why sister-in-law was birthed. I was like, I need to empower women so that women don't find themselves in the situation that my mom was in after her divorce and then having to just, you know, raw it with two children.
Guys, you are hearing, I think you were also observing. I was having shivers throughout this conversation, throughout your answer. You know why? It affirms, one, I said when we met, the first thing that came to my mind, and I was laughing. think about how similar we are, literally. Just you speaking about, you know, the magazine, and then someone believing in you, and the reason why you started, you know, sister-in-law. It's actually so insane how people are different and yet the same.
Absolutely.
People are different and yet the same. And the reason why I say this is because someone who's watching out there as well, because we never had an introductory video on, you know, in my lawful experience. And we did not even introduce each other officially when we started this podcast because of, you know, the flow, the flow, that's how it flowed. But with me as well, I was just, I just finished varsity. I just finished my LLB. And similarly, I didn't have, you know, people, connections, networks, information. And then as I was looking for articles, because similarly, I didn't apply prior. Now I'm looking for articles, you know, it's difficult. And then somebody sends me a link and they say, here's a constitutional law clerk advert. And then apply. And I'm like, what is this? What is a constitutional law clerk?
Not much back then.
A clerk? Yeah. Why? A clerk? Why would you think that?
Agree.
Why? Only to find, guys, it's not the clerk that you think. You actually, you know, the judge's right-hand man. You do the research. You get these cases. You really, you know, have an input in how these judgments are written, the outcome, you from the start to the end are participating in that very important process. But then I got myself into a situation where now that I was going to start the next year at the Constitutional Court, and because I was applying so much, then I finally received answers from,
for articles.
I had to just sit down and think, is this what I want to do? And at the time, I also had received a bursary opportunity from the Free State Premier's office to do my LLM. So I was like, I can't do two things at once. Let me focus on my LLM. Then when I go to the Concord next year, I would have my LLM and then bring that experience to the court. And then I went to the Concord, so I declined the articles. Went to the Concord. And then when I graduated from my master's, I think I was 23 at the time, it just blew up on social media. Then Glamour magazine contacted me and was like, can we feature you on Glamour? And I was like, oh, amazing. Similarly, I didn't have photos. I didn't have photo shoot. Guys, I remember. I if you go to that spread, guys, I'm so, so embarrassed, but, you know, you start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere.
My eyebrows went down. Girl, I was looking like...
What year was that, anyway? I'm sure we probably just...
2016.
Started eyebrows.
Do you know what I mean?
In 2019.
Bad. But the crux of it is, you know, after that, I said, yes, I'm being invited on these platforms. You know, your SABCs, I'm at this very big platform, the first at the time. But what then? After this, what then? I'm having people asking me, you know, can you mentor me? Because I see myself being there as well at the Concord. And I said, me being the first, I don't want to be the only or the last. So let me start SWCM to ensure that I disseminate information to those.
And bring others on.
Exactly, and bring others on and make sure that more people know about this position, more people feel, you know, confident to apply despite where they come from. Because I myself come from Colesberg. It's a very small town, marginalized background. Nobody knows about it, but here is a girl from, you know, those dusty streets and they are here. Actually, I think the Glamour magazine put that as a title, from the dusty streets of Colesberg.
That just shows how important these kind of conversations are. You know, you always think that you are going through a certain experience alone, but it's through these conversations that you realize that we are similar.
We are.
We have a lot in common. But also, more importantly, it just highlights the importance of representation and transformation.
Definitely.
It does a lot for a young black girl to see somebody who looks like them in positions that were previously reserved for white men. So it is important for us to share our story, no matter how small the platform. That's why, you know, back then, whenever people were like, hey, we want to feature you on our Facebook page, or we want to do this, I was just like, I'm going to put in the same amount of heart to these Facebook interviews that I do to the True Love, because impact is reaching out to one person.
Definitely.
So yeah, I think I really love what you said about starting Sinako Weekend to show that you know, basically, or rather to highlight what it means to be a constitutional club.
Yeah.
Because back then, I only had two options. Mm-hmm. I either knew that I'm going to become an attorney,
yeah,
or I'm going to become an advocate.
Mm.
I had no idea that I could, you know, try to explore NPA,
yeah,
try to explore being a clerk at the Constitutional Court. I had no idea that I can actually even be a legal intern.
That's the thing.
You know, at an organization. And I just knew that, yo, I must first do articles. That's all I knew.
Exactly.
Articles. I couldn't even know that. I didn't even know that straight from varsity I could pursue privilege.
Can you believe that?
So it was important to start Sustain Law to also share this kind of information. Mm. Mentorship is important, because how else are people going to find out about opportunities of studying abroad?
Exactly.
If I don't have something like Sisters in Conversation, where I'm profiling women who have studied abroad
and who have done share all their journey these things with us. That they're sharing their journey. And of course, that's the reason why we have In My Lawful Experience as well.
Mm.
That's why we have you here today, and you have me here today as well.
I love it.
Because, you know, you're right. Someone out there as well could be watching this or listening to this, but they also have the same sentiments,
mm-hmm,
or they didn't even know prior to this conversation that there are those opportunities available. But now that we've highlighted them, now that we have mentioned them, they know that they can go to the podcast, listen to all the other conversations that you've had with all the other amazing women out there, which is very informative, mm-hmm, and know that there are other opportunities that exist, you know, except the traditional you know, routes that we're constantly being told about. And also, you can find yourself and decide that if this doesn't work for me, I'm exploring something else. I mean, yourself, you
I always say, with Sustain Law, I created my own path.
Exactly.
I went the unconventional route.
Exactly.
There was a time when people were like, what do you do? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I remember my dad was like, you're leaving your job. Why are you leaving your job? What are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know, Dad. What does Oprah do?
Mm.
Like, can you say for sure that Oprah is an actress, or she's a TV presenter, or she's a this, or she's a that? You can't say for sure what Oprah does.
She's versatile.
But we know who Oprah is. And I was like, I don't know, Dad. What does Oprah do? And he was like, and he always tells me to this day, whenever I, you know, come across my peers and they're like, you know, what does your daughter do? He always remembers that conversation where he was trying to figure out, you are leaving a well-paying job at a bank to go and pursue Sustain Law. What is Sustain Law? And I was like, I don't know what it looks like yet, but I do know that I'm committed to paving my own journey in my own career. And that was very important to me, that
amazing,
I could then use the information or the knowledge that I have, my qualification, to actually map out a route that no one has ever taken.
Exactly. I'm so inspired. I'm so inspired. I am literally inspired. And I know if you are listening and you watching this, you're inspired as well. I mean, like we said, a long time coming. Here we are, finally having this conversation. The most brilliant conversation that I could have waited another 3 years for.
No, I'm so happy we're doing it. But there's actually been one question that has been playing in my mind for a few days.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. A few days, because I was a guest on another podcast, Wellness in the Workplace, hosted by Mbali, and she forgot to ask me a burning question.
Yes,
but now I at least have the pleasure of asking someone else. So basically, she wanted to know, with all your accolades, what does that do for, like, how do you handle every time, you know, Sinako top 200, Maiden Guardian this, or Sinako being featured in a Glamour magazine, Sinako being the youngest, what does that do for your imposter syndrome? Do you always feel like you're a fraud when people want to award you for the work that you're doing? Do you always feel like, what are they seeing? You know, for me, it's always when people introduce me, like when I give my bio and they're like, Tebalo is what, Guardian this, Nelson Mandela, what? And I'm like, who is this person that they're talking about? I don't know who they're talking about. And then I'm like, yo, and I'm always like to my husband, baby, I just got an email that I've been nominated for what, and I feel like I'm a fraud. Like, why is a platform as big as XYZ, you know, acknowledging the work that I do when I'm not even this big, you know, person?
I think
for you, what, you know, how do you handle that?
I think, first of all, we are very grateful for the husbands who are always reminding us who we are. Absolutely. I think for the longest of times, I've always never had an opportunity to sit back and reflect on who I am. And
that's so
I think that is the biggest cause of imposter syndrome.
Mm.
Not having time to sit back and reflect and say, who am I?
Because after you achieve something, you're always then you're rushing for the next goal. You keep going.
Okay,
I've done this. Now let me do that.
You know, you just keep going. And you really never have time to appreciate yourself as well.
Yes.
And I think that's the biggest cause of imposter syndrome. For me, I think I do a lot of introspection. I go to therapy. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, this circle that reminds me of who I am. So that I don't lose sight. Mm-hmm. And I won't deny that for the longest of times. For example, when I got the Concord, I felt that...
You were like, hey, a girl from Dusty Colbert.
Mina. Because remember for my interview, right? I had one interview with Judge After.
Mm.
And the people that I met, they were from birth, they were from here, they were dressed so nice, girl. You can see Masumundo on a privilege. Mm. And then I'm just wearing what I could at the time.
Put together.
And I felt that, do I even belong here?
Mm.
You know, because this, I feel out of place.
Mm.
But the people who came through supporting me and affirming me made me believe that if not me, then who?
Mm, I deserve
and
to be here.
I deserve to be here. Mm. And I think I've taken that in every room that I walk in. And I know that I might come across as having this high, you know, big personality. I think I do, where I just... I just shine automatically.
Mm.
And even that, before, it made me want to shrink.
Mm.
You know, me just trying to be so bubbly, and then people are like, who is this?
You're all over.
Bubbly. Mm. You know, it used to make me want to shrink.
Mm.
But the more I've worked on myself, the lesser do I feel the need to change in those surroundings. Mm. Because I think also... We doubt ourselves too much.
Mm.
And if somebody believes in you, which is something I said to my mentee this morning, if somebody believes in you and sees something in you, you should do the same.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Add text.
And add text. And for me, all these accolades, if anything, I think they are affirming of the work that we do.
Yeah.
I mean, Maylen Garden affirmed the work that we've been doing with Sago We Can for like 5 years, 6 years this year. And even though my biggest accolade has always been the impact in people's lives, seeing how my mentees have, you know, grown. They've also sat at the Constitutional Court.
Mm.
You know, one of my mentees recently just started articles at this big law firm. We've worked on her interview, we've worked on her CV, we've worked on her recommendation. Seeing it come to life, I'm like, damn.
And I think a lot of people, you know, I think it's very important that you've mentioned that, because the most important thing for me is seeing it all come to life. Like, Tebalo, it's so... You know, I always appreciate the fact that you taught me what a will was. Something basic.
Yeah.
You taught me what a will was. But I then, you know, went and forced my husband to make a will. And today I'm a widow, but I'm an empowered widow.
Yes.
And seeing that story from a real person come to life is the reason why I've kept going with Sister Ndlo. Yeah. I'm always telling people, right, if you go into something for money,
yes,
you are going to fail very quickly.
Or even the accolades. Yes.
Or even the accolades.
Because they're never going to fail
very quickly.
Sometimes they never come.
Your why must always be because you cannot sleep knowing that there's someone out there, you know, who doesn't know this information
and
that they should
know. And you can do
something
about
it. So these real people's stories keep me up at night, and they ensure that tomorrow, even though I'm feeling tired, even though I don't want to, I'm just like, guys, don't forget the importance of a marriage contract. Guys, don't forget the importance of knowing how to put together a CV.
Always.
And we take some of these things for granted, you know, like we take some of these skills for granted. Like, where is a student supposed to know how to draft a CV from? We're not taught these things in school, you know? So those are the things that keep me up at night. And those are the things that ensure that even when there's no money coming in, even when there's no recognition, I'm like, sustain law.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that with that being said, you who's listening and you who's watching, keep it locked on these channels because
there's
they're going
to
empower you.
There's a lot more to come.
I cannot deny it, and you cannot deny it either. And Dirello, thank you so much for honoring this invite and
finally, that's all I can keep saying.
finally, making it happen. And that being said, my name is Senako Lindazwe.
I am Dibelo Motsane.
And we will chat soon again. Bye.